In professional sports, a franchise player is an athlete who is not simply the best player on their team, but one that the team can build their franchise around for the foreseeable future.
Welcome into a brand new edition of Franchise Players here on Tobacco Road Sports Radio, tobaccoroadsportsradio.com, part of your TGI Friday lineup every single Friday afternoon from 3 to 6 p.m. Local sports talk produced here in the Triad. WWBG 1470 AM. You can hear that in Guilford County every Friday afternoon at 5 p.m. If you missed it, you can hear the encore on WTOB 980 AM, 96.7 FM at 6 p.m. over there right before high school football. Loaded show today. Of course, David Glenn in with us on his bi-weekly trip in the sports buffet. We'll talk, got a lot of talk, some Major League Baseball stuff we got to go over, some Carolina Panthers stuff to go over, some ACC stuff to go over. So we'll talk to him a little bit about that. Mark Pruitt of the Winston-Salem Journal will stop by, give us our top three high school football games of the night tonight. As you get settled in, games will start kicking off around 7 p.m. or so here across the Triad. We got about 3 or 4 weeks left in the season. It's gone. We've gone past the halfway point at this point. So we'll get you ready for that as well as we usually do every Friday. Coming in first, though, batting off, lead off, John Johnson, the sports director from WXII News 12. What's going on, man? How you doing?
Good, Desmond. How are you? Thanks for having me back.
Good, man. Doing really good. I wanted to get into a couple of things on the football side with you starting off because it's finally fall. It's starting to feel like it outside. We're not dealing with the 85 degree weather at like 7:30 in the evening, kids cramping up on the sidelines and whatnot. So football's finally here. I want to start off ACC football with you because we got a huge matchup in the ACC coming up here this weekend on Saturday. 12th ranked UNC taking on 25th ranked Miami Saturday night, 7 p.m. That game will be on ABC for those trying to figure out how to watch it. 7:30 kickoff, excuse me. Carolina 5-0 start, first time since 1997. They actually went 8-0 in that season. And me being a Carolina fan, I vaguely remember the buzz as they got week to week in there. In your mind, what are the odds that Carolina could crash the college football playoffs?
Ah, man. You know, I've had this question asked me before on another radio show, and the topic was broached. And I actually think there's a really good chance. This Carolina football team is exciting. And they're different than the Carolina football teams we've seen in years past, especially the most recent years where they've just relied on their offense so much to score. We know they've got a Heisman Trophy candidate in Drake May who can light it up. And they've got a really nice run game, and they've got skill wide receivers. And then they add Tez, you know, into the lineup. But it's really their defense that's been really impressive this year. I think it was like this time last year, we were wondering if Gene Chizik was even going to make it through the season, right?
Yeah,
like, it was a bad situation, but they've really played extremely well on the defensive side of the ball. They're aggressive, they're ball hunting, they're getting after the quarterback. There's a chance. I mean, I don't think there's anyone, and I think, right, let me preface this. This is the litmus test game against Miami, right? You know, the Canes are coming in. They were one of the top teams in the country. They're coming off of a really brutal loss. Carolina wants to assert themselves as one of the top teams in the country. This is a game you got to take care of business. And I really like this team, this opportunity, because if you look down the stretch after this game against Miami, I mean, I think they got Virginia next week. It's there for them. So it's there for the Tar Heels to make some noise.
I went and pulled up their remaining schedule because I was curious as what do they have in front of them after Miami. Say they get past Miami, they'll have a win against a ranked team. They got Virginia next week, then at Georgia Tech, hosting Campbell November 4th, rivalry game against Duke at home. It's homecoming on November 11th. A Clemson team that's kind of hard to figure out. They're at Clemson November 18th, and then they finish at NC State November 25th. So those last three games are tricky because Duke is not bad themselves. Matter of fact, State and Duke are taking on each other this Saturday as well. 4-2 NC State taking on 17th ranked Duke, 4-1 Duke. Is this a bigger game for NC State or a bigger game for Duke?
It's a bigger game for State, in my opinion. Duke, you know, we think we know that Duke is pretty good. For NC State, this is one of those opportunities where are we going to make a bowl game this year kind of deal, where their schedule gets a little tough. You know, there's that earmarked game against Wake Forest where both teams could be playing for a bowl game in that game and in that matchup. I think it's a huge game for NC State. MJ Morris looked pretty good at times last week. I think, you know, there's a dynamic that he brings to this Wolfpack offense that's interesting that Brennan Armstrong didn't quite bring. I think it's a big game for NC State. I really do. I think for Duke, you know, there's a chance Riley Leonard plays. You know, you heard Mike Elko talk about it earlier in the week that Riley is working towards getting back. I don't know if that ends up being the case. If he doesn't play, I can't imagine that you'd be upset with where Duke is at this point. I think this is really important week for NC State and this program.
It's almost like the Duke fans don't know what to do with their hands. Like, they're not used to the
football. They're not used to this, man.
Yeah, like, well, we don't know how to act. Like, we're talking about the recruits coming in for basketball here in a little bit. And
that's right.
They still got football going on mid-October. So
they're usually getting ready for Midnight Madness right now.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they're, it's like football team. We don't even have a football team. If you had to pick right now, Friday, October the 13th, the two teams will be in the ACC championship, because, of course, this year they did away with divisions. So it's wide open. It could be any kind of combination here. We've got some teams at the top of the standings that we weren't expecting to be there. I'm looking dead in the eye of Louisville right now. Yeah. I don't think anyone predicted that Louisville would be where they are. If you had to choose two teams that would be in the ACC championship today, who would you put your money on?
Man, that's a great question because I think there's so much that can happen. You mentioned Clemson being a team that we really can't figure out. I didn't love them coming into the season, and I still don't. But
me either.
It's Clemson. They're going to find a way to win some games that they probably shouldn't, and they've lost some games they probably shouldn't either. If I had to put money on it, I really like what Louisville's done, and I think that the Cards are kind of in position now to get to that point. And I'm going to stick with what I said. I think Carolina's getting there. I really do. I really like this Tar Heel football team. It's just the most complete team that they fielded in a while. And if I had, push comes to shove, I need to win a game. It's not bad having probably the second best quarterback in the country.
Yeah.
to make the case he's the best quarterback in the country running your football team. So, I think that'd be my combination too right there. But don't hold me to it, because I had Louisville like ranked last in my basketball.
I mean, I'm sitting here talking about Duke fans not knowing what to do with their hands. Carolina fans are tentatively – see, I'm a Carolina fan. So it's like with the football team, every once in a while they'll have a team like this where it's like you want to root for them, you want to get super involved, and something happens and you're just like, I feel like I just wasted my time. This team doesn't have that vibe. They do feel like they are – the most complete team since Matt Brown's return to Chapel Hill. And it took them a couple of cycles of recruiting to get it to this point. But the thing I love about what they're doing is that they recruit heavy in the triad. Like, they are here a lot. There's some
kids on
the team. there's a lot of kids in this area that end up going to Chapel Hill. And Matt Brown kind of did, like what Miami used to do back in the day, where they'd rope off that bottom half of Florida and just recruit heavy there, the state of Miami or whatnot. He's kind of circled out Charlotte, Mecklenburg, and like the Triad area to bring those kids up to Carolina instead of them going to the SEC or wherever, because for years the SEC, Bama and Georgia still do, but they were coming here and just poaching kids. Like, our top kids would immediately be in the SEC instead of the ACC. So Carolina, NC State's really good about that too, and Duke, matter of fact. Duke has been heavily recruiting in this area, and I think the proof's in the pudding is really starting to show as those kids get older and they're in those programs a little bit longer. John Johnson here with the sports director for WXII here in the Triad. You can follow him on Twitter at TheJJohnsonTV. I know you probably don't want to do it, but we need to talk about these Panthers real quick while I got you in here. Panthers, Dolphins,
oh,
1 p.m. CBS Sunday. I've had to do – I do believe in Panthers with Jonathan Stewart and Skylar Callahan once a week. And this is my fourth year hosting that for Believe. And every year has been a year of sorrow. Like, I have not hosted a season where we have been good. So it's from this thing. We try to keep it positive and look at the positive vibes of whatever's going on. It's getting harder and harder to do that with Carolina right now. What's the one thing in your mind covering this team you know, being there, actually in the press room, talking to Frank Wright and the players and catching the vibe there. What's the one thing you think that has bothered you the most watching the product on the field each week?
Man, there's a lot of things
I know
that have bothered me. Like, it's true. There's and I think I've been really vocal about it on air. I think I've been vocal about it on Twitter. I think the one thing that's really, really bothered me the most is how this team has not helped. And when I mean this team, I mean this coaching staff and this organization has not helped and set Bryce Young up for success. I really don't believe they've done that. I think the way the offense has been called through the first 5 weeks and through Bryce's first 4 weeks has been very tight. I think it's been very conservative. I think they've and it goes back to a point that I made in preseason. If they didn't think he was ready to start, they should not have started him week one, because now you can never reverse course. This is the course that we've taken. And it doesn't look like they trust him that he's actually ready to play football. There's been many a times where we've sat in the press box and watched some of these route combinations that the offense is running, and that's a lot of underneath stuff, and they'll shell out two wide receivers or a wide receiver deep into bracket coverage. The guy's covered, and Bryce has nothing to do with the football, and they've got, you know, 8-9 men in protection for him, so he really doesn't have an outlet because they really don't trust the offensive line. And the wide receivers they've put around him, they're all kind of the same player. There's no guy that can create separation. No offense to Adam Thielen. I think he's been pretty good. He's been the only safety blanket for Bryce Young at this point. But there's too many players that look exactly the same. The running back situation, the running back room is exactly the same.
There's no
Chuba Hubbard. There's no power back. Chuba Hubbard and Miles Sanders are the same player. And what are we doing here with that? You know, this falls to Scott Fitterer. This falls to Frank Reich and the organization, and it's just, in my opinion, it's been a little bit of malpractice on their fault, on their part, for not giving Bryce Young enough weapons to help him out, and they're not putting him in position to succeed, in my opinion. That's what I've seen through the first 4 weeks that he's played and the 5 weeks of football with the Panthers.
For me, it's the whatever they're doing with Thomas Brown, because like I made the mistake of watching the entire San Francisco-Dallas football game earlier in the week, where San Francisco just did whatever they wanted to on offense pretty much. And then I've seen bits and pieces of Miami with Mike McDaniel coming from the 49ers and what they do on offense. Now, granted, they've got like a track team out there playing football. Like maybe since
Tecmo Ball out there.
Yeah. It's literally like you got to zigzag with them. But like, I'm just sitting here. Thomas Brown came from the Rams and Sean McVay's system, and I don't see any kind of influence of that at all. There's not a lot of pre-snap movement. There's not a lot of misdirection. There's not a lot of scheming to get a guy just in space. It's all harder than it needs to be. And when Reich said what he said during that press conference, I think it was last week, when he was describing the whole Adam Thielen play where he wasn't in, he called a play for him. He wasn't there. He didn't know he wasn't there, so he had to call timeout. Besides the clock management that's been horrific the past, well, really all season, stuff like that makes the press immediately start to think, well, what do you mean that that could only go to Adam Thielen? Right. Like, isn't that kind of hampering your young quarterback who's used to kind of being able to process things on the field as he goes? If you're going sending him out there and you're like, it has to go to here, it can't go anyplace else. So no matter what else is going on, no matter what you see or who's open, you have to throw it to that guy. Yep. So he's forcing it in there. It didn't seem like Andy Dalton had that issue week three against Seattle on the road. They kind of gave him a little bit more freedom. I don't know this narrative that's going around. I don't know if you believe it or not either, that Frank Wright didn't want Bryce Young. There's too much out there to suggest that he was the guy from the beginning, including film from the Panthers themselves, you know, going through the process of landing on Bryce Young. But before I get you out of here, thoughts on rookie quarterback Bryce Young? How do you feel? Because he's getting compared to CJ Stroud, which he's going to get compared to. They went number one, number two, and that's naturally going to happen. But it's two different situations going on, and CJ's getting a lot of love right now, and Bryce is not. What do you think about Bryce right now, five games in?
Bryce hasn't played well, and I think we can all say that. And Bryce would probably admit that he hasn't played particularly well yet. But he's still learning. He's still a rookie quarterback. I'm still a fan of his. I think he's got tremendous talent. And I think on our the last time I was on the show, I said, you know, if you weren't going to trade all the picks, you know, that would be the guy that I was most interested in taking was Bryce Young. I think it's unfair to compare him and CJ because Houston is just letting CJ Stroud go out there and rip it.
Yep.
They're just letting him have fun, play football, and they're willing to live with the mistakes. The Panthers, on the other hand, are playing super conservative football with Bryce, and it's almost like he's playing like he's afraid to make a mistake.
Yes.
Because he doesn't have the options around him. I see a kid out there that is growing at the quarterback position. It's clear he's a leader on that team. Those guys absolutely love him.
Yeah.
I've been in the locker rooms, the way they talk about him, and I'm just talking about the players, not even talking about the coaches, the way the players talk about him, the way they rallied around him. I think it was 2 weeks ago, he called everyone to the side and had a conversation, and the entire offense was around listening to him. It wasn't
they showed it on TV, actually. Yeah. So I was like, wow, that's the first time we've really seen that.
It wasn't a makeshift kind of deal. This kid is well-liked, and I think everyone sees the talent there. The problem is he's playing like he's afraid to make a mistake, and I think that boils down to what we were just talking about previously, where this coaching staff is really not giving him enough freedom to go out there and be Bryce Young. Go play football. We'll live with the mistakes. At this point, we're 0-5.
Yeah.
Cut it loose.
Let him go. Yeah.
Cut it loose. Let the kid play. I don't care if he throws 25 interceptions the rest of the season. I want to see this kid go out there, play confident, make some plays, and give some fans something to be excited about, because I'm still excited about the player that he potentially is.
And I think that's what it is. I think the fan base for the Panthers, the last number one pick we had was Cam Newton. And it's not really fair to compare it to Cam, because Cam was a unicorn. Like, Cam was just a different dude altogether. And if anything, this whole situation is giving me even more appreciation for Cam Newton and what he did, because even in his rookie year, they went 6-10, but it was an exciting 6-10. Like, we were seeing offense. Like, they had a squad. They had Steve Smith and Greg Olsen. D'Angelo Williams and Jonathan Stewart were on that team. He had a tackle in Jordan Gross. He had a defense. I mean, like, they had dudes on that team, and they still went 6-10. So, I mean, I think the Panther fans are kind of like, what is this? This looks like junior high school offense, and that's not what we were told we were going to get. So, doesn't help. They're about to go take on the team that's got the most offense in the first five games in NFL history in the Miami Dolphins on Sunday. And we're missing like 10 starters, and a lot of them are on defense. So we'll see.
That's a lot of points by Miami.
My guy Shannon Sharp said, hopefully they won't drop a 70 piece or a 50 piece with 20 flats for free bonus on the side. We don't need that going into our bye week. No. Follow him on Twitter at the J Johnson TV, sports director for WXI, John Johnson. Stop by. Appreciate you doing this for me, man.
Thanks for having me, man.
Coming up, DG, David Glenn from the North Carolina Sports Network is going to stop by his biweekly venture into the sports buffet. We'll get into Major League Baseball. How likely is it for the state of North Carolina to get a Major League Baseball franchise? And we'll talk Major League Baseball playoffs, too, that's going on. So stick around. Be back in just a bit. You're listening and watching Franchise Players here on WWBG 1470 AM and WTOB 980 AM.
In professional sports, a franchise player is an athlete who is not simply the best player on their team, but one that the team can build their franchise around for the foreseeable future.
Welcome back into Franchise Players here on Tobacco Road Sports Radio, part of your TGI Friday lineup here on WWBG 1470 AM and WTOB 980 AM, 96.7 FM in the Triad. I'm your host, Desmond Johnson, here with you every Friday. We will get you ready for your high school football kickoffs. Nobody does it better than Tobacco Road Sports Radio in the Triad. Not one, but two games to choose from tonight on WTOB. East Forsyth taking on Reynolds. It's homecoming for East Forsyth as they are in a deadlock three-way tie in the CPC with Davie County and West Forsyth, who are playing actually out in Davie tonight. You can catch that kickoff with East and Reynolds at 7 p.m. on WTOB. Grimsley taking on Southwest Guilford. That kickoff's at 7:30 p.m. on WCOG 105.3 FM and 1320 AM. Joining us as he does bi-weekly, David Glenn, part of the North Carolina Sports Network. You can follow him on Twitter at David Glenn Show. What's going on, DG? How you doing, man?
I'm doing great, Des. It's that fun time of year, man. We've got Major League Baseball playoffs, hockey season just started, college basketball is not far away, and of course, college football and the NFL are cranking up.
Yeah, so what better thing to do than the sports buffet with DG, because we got a lot of things to touch on. A lot of stuff happened here in North Carolina and this general region over the past week or so that I wanted to touch on. Before we get into Major League Baseball, because I know you're a Philadelphia Phillies fan, so I know you're that's why you've got this aura with you today, like you're feeling good. I can see it on you. I got to start with the Charlotte Hornets and the situation with Miles Bridges. I do some work for the All SI group that writes stuff for Sports Illustrated for the Hornets for their online. And when this first dropped in our Slack, we were talking about it because it sounded like it was a warrant that had been put out in January and just hadn't served it. And then more and more started coming out. And we were like, oh, this happened October the 6th. So for those that don't know or haven't been following, Miles Bridges in the news again, criminal summons issued on Wednesday of this week for violating a domestic violence protection order. Misdemeanor child abuse, injury to personal property. DG, can you explain with your legal background, can you explain to the audience what a criminal summons actually is? And what do you think is going to happen to Bridges here?
Well, I think he's in big trouble because the legal system really frowns on striking a deal with somebody who has done something wrong on the hopes that it was a one-time thing or you can get beyond whatever wrongdoing there was. In Miles Bridges' case, keep in mind that he is already serving 3 years of probation because of a June 2022 case involving domestic violence, involving the mother of his two children. And she accused Bridges of assaulting her in front of the children. Now, Bridges pleaded no contest to that, which means you're kind of accepting responsibility while in a legal way. You're not admitting that you did it. It's kind of cutting a deal, basically. But when you violate the terms of your order while serving your 3 years of probation, judges are not going to like that. And the summons is an official accusation of violating the protection order. He's not supposed to go near this woman, for example. And it's pretty clear that he has violated that. And I don't know if Miles Bridges is going to play for the Hornets again, but this is a huge step in the wrong direction based on the evidence that we have.
My phone actually just went off with an update from ESPN. This just in: suspended forward Miles Bridges turns himself in after an arrest warrant was issued for an alleged protective order violation. So there was a warrant out for his arrest. He has turned himself in to the authorities. And what you just said there, that made me feel that's it. That's a wrap for him. I would imagine it's just a matter of doing due diligence. And I don't expect to see Miles Bridges in a Charlotte Hornets uniform ever again, really after this. It sounded like, from what I've been gathering from the case, the mother of his children was actually at his house. Either they were he was giving the kids back, or she was dropping them off, or whatever was going on, but they were at his home in Charlotte. And the story was going that he was throwing billiard balls or something at the car, and he had a girl there that was kicking the car and stuff. The kids are inside the car. There's a lot of stuff going on in terms of what's happening here, but the main story here is that Miles Bridges just basically fumbled the bag again. Like, he literally just, like, he can't get out of his own way. And I feel bad for him to a certain extent, but not as much, because you just laid out, he understood what he pled no contest to. So he can't do something like this and expect to get another slap on the wrist. I feel like they're going to come down twice as hard now, but based off of what you just said, judges don't like that. They don't like to give leniency and then you go out and do the exact same thing again. Like, it feels like he's going to actually go to jail. That's what it feels like from listening to it from the outside. Now, that I don't know, that's all speculation, but just the way it sounds like Bridges' career in Charlotte, at least, is probably over. I mean,
yeah, and remember, he is already on a 10-game suspension from the NBA
right
to begin this season prior to all this. I know the Associated Press just recently dug up three different incidents in the Charlotte Mecklenburg Police Department files, all related to Miles Bridges and various accusations against him. So, you know, the NBA, remember, can suspend you even more, even if you're not convicted, based on, you know, just the preponderance of the evidence, as they say in court sometimes. So this is a sad story. I mean, yeah. This is a promising young player who's making millions of dollars as a professional basketball player chasing his dream. And we try to be a country of second chances, and he's on his second chance, and it looks like he's blowing that second chance.
Yeah, so just bad news coming in for the beginning of the season for the Hornets. New ownership, you know, you just signed LaMelo Ball to the biggest deal in team history. You're trying to let these young guns play, and now you got to deal with this at the beginning of the season. David Glenn joining us here in the Sports Buffet. Follow North Carolina Sports Network on YouTube for exclusives. We're going to get to your interview with Tom Dundon in just a bit. But I want to talk to you a little Major League Baseball. We don't get a chance to talk a whole lot about baseball here on Franchise Players, but the National League Division Series, the Braves fall to the Phillies last night 3-1 to lose the series 3-1. The Braves had the best record in baseball. They had 104 wins. Should the division series be 7 games? Because I know wild card, they for a while it was just a one game winner take all wild card type situation, which I thought was completely unfair. They put that out to 3, which is like a weekend series or whatever, which makes sense. And then the division games, I want to say when I was a kid they were 7, and they've moved them to 5, and now the championship series are 7, or maybe I'm just like tripping and I don't remember correctly. Should the division series be 7 so that there's more of an advantage for those higher seed teams that have won 100 games, because the Braves are out, the Dodgers are out, the Orioles are out, like all the top seeds are gone and they fell in these division series. Should it be 7, or are you good with it being 5 because you're a Phillies fan? And you know,
no, you know, I mean, I try to look at the bigger picture in all seriousness, because I want the best possible, most fair system. You know, this year, my team, the Phillies, happened to benefit. But there have been years where I felt the other way, right? So it's all about the reality is that the Major League Baseball regular season is the ultimate marathon of team sports, right? I mean, it's 162 games. So those who prove the most not only should make the playoffs, but should get the biggest benefit of the doubt. I'm open-minded about going from 5 to 7 games in this round of the postseason. I'm open-minded about, I mean, who knows? Baseball's playoffs could expand again. And in that scenario, maybe those best teams don't have that nearly week-long wait. Some of these managers are bothered more, Des, by the fact that their guys are trying to simulate real-world action in practice for 5 or 6 days, while these wildcard teams are actually competing, you know, on national TV against players in the opposing uniforms. You just can't simulate that. You can't simulate what the Braves just experienced twice in Philadelphia. There's no practice in the history of mankind that is going to simulate those pitchers, those fans, that environment.
Yeah.
So whatever the tweaks are, I'm open-minded about it as a guy who's loved baseball since I was truly a little boy. But I do think that those teams that have the best records deserve something bigger in the postseason. And I think the number is only 7 of the last 28. So we've had 28 years roughly of this more modern approach to the baseball postseason. And only 7 of those 28 years did the best team, meaning the winningest team in baseball, the Braves this year. Only a quarter of the time is the team with the best record winning the World Series.
Man,
I can promise you the best record in the NBA wins the NBA title a heck of a lot more than 25% of the time. Mm-hmm. So baseball, you know, I still love the postseason as it is, but I'm open-minded about those tweaks that you're throwing up the flagpole.
And I wrote it down. The ALCS is the 5th seed Texas Rangers against the 2 seed Houston Astros, who by default probably become the favorite here to win the World Series. They're the highest seed left. And the LCS, it's the 4 seed Phillies versus the 6 seed Diamondbacks. So I have no idea. I'd imagine probably Astros Phillies is probably what Major League Baseball probably wants for the for the World Series, because you got star power and stuff there. But we'll see what happens out of that. I'm gonna save you from a Panthers question.
All right.
We're running up against time, and there's not a whole lot we can really discuss with the Panthers. And I feel like I've been talking about them all week, but they do play 1 o'clock Sunday on CBS. I wanted to get to your exclusive with Carolina Hurricanes owner Tom Dundon from early October, where he basically discussed with you the urge to bring Major League Baseball to North Carolina. As you know, I'm in Kernersville, and the last time this came about was about 20 years ago. Minnesota Twins were looking to move. Kernersville was kind of where they were saying they were going to put them. If you're familiar with this area, the stadium they were going to build is pretty much where the FedEx facility is now, right off of 40, where the 240s split apart. So it was kind of in Colfax, but really would have been in Kernersville and right off the highway. You can get there an hour and a half from anywhere in the state. This would be in Raleigh, in that area. if you're familiar in Raleigh, over by PNC Arena, like PNC Arena looks like it's in a cow pasture. Like it literally, there's nothing around it. It's just the arena. Yeah. And Dundon is starting to put some plans out to develop some stuff around that area. And the stadium would probably be over there, which would make a lot of sense. How likely do you think this can actually happen? What needs to happen for it to go down? And what's the time window here as Major League Baseball is looking to expand potentially to, was it 32 teams, I think?
Yeah. So baseball's at 30. Some of the other leagues that we follow are already at 32. And many baseball owners have said, we're ready to expand. Now, when they say ready, remember, baseball's the only major team league we follow that has not expanded in the last 25 years. Oh, baseball wow. hasn't expanded since 1998. So they're in the process of forming an expansion committee, which makes it real, even in the words of Commissioner Rob Manfred. It's hard to say where Raleigh is. Some people are rolling their eyes at Raleigh as a candidate. Others are very optimistic. I really think that the honest assessment here in 2023 is there is no favorite. And what I mean is, yeah, Nashville has a whole bunch of celebrities, and it's a really cool town, and it's a growing town, but they don't have a stadium either. You know, and Salt Lake City's an intriguing, you know, fill a hole in the MLB map out west, just like Raleigh would fill a hole in sort of the mid-Atlantic map here on the East Coast. There are a lot of good things in favor of Salt Lake City or Vancouver or Portland or Nashville or Raleigh or even maybe Charlotte if they find somebody to step forward. But since nobody has a built-in stadium ready to go, everybody has ideas and artist renderings and government promises in some cases. Nobody has the stadium ready to go. So there is no favorite. And the best way to put it is Raleigh is among a half a dozen cities that has a legitimate shot. There are obstacles. And if you're missing, you know, any one leg from the table, you're going to be eliminated. One of the legs of the table is the stadium scenario, which takes a long time to figure out. You need governmental cooperation. You need to find a site. Is it something in South Raleigh, for example? Is it somewhere else? But again, those other cities have similar problems related to that. I talked with Governor Roy Cooper about this, and he said, because of the growth of our population in this state, we are the most populous state without a Major League Baseball franchise. We're number one. And our population is similar to the state of Ohio, and Ohio has both the Cleveland Guardians and the Cincinnati Reds.
Wow, yeah.
So demographically and numerically, we're a candidate as a state for sure. Charlotte's general area is even larger than the Triangle area population-wise. But as Governor Cooper said, even though many other things had been aligning, there was not a billionaire willing to step forward the way David Tepper stepped forward and got Charlotte a Major League Soccer franchise. Remember that? Mm-hmm. He not only is a mega billionaire, he had a ready stadium, his football stadium. So MLS sees a mega billionaire in a stadium, and they're like, all right, Charlotte's number one on the list. Here we go. So you have to have the stadium. Dundon is now the billionaire. It was really funny, my phone call with him. I told him I called all the billionaires and every billionaire in the two-state area, and none of them is interested in leading a charge to get Major League Baseball. And he says, well, I know one. And I'm like, who? And he said, me. So you have a billionaire who's ready to spearhead the efforts. We'll see about the stadium. We'll see about the governmental support. But the other legs of the table include corporate support. It includes people like you and me signing up for season ticket deposits or promising to make season ticket deposits. Like there's a whole bunch of things that have to happen. And to answer the last part of your question, this is whereas it's important for Raleigh or anybody else to get the ball rolling, the actual expansion team is not likely to happen, in my opinion, until 2028. So we're talking 5 years down the road.
Yeah, that makes sense though.
In the next year or two, we're going to see who's a contender and who's a pretender. Because you have to have the deep pockets. You have to have the stadium. You have to have the corporate support. You have to have the government support. If anything is missing there, I don't care what city you are, one chopped leg under your table makes your whole table fall. It's going to be fascinating to watch. I'm excited that Tom Dundon, who's a very impressive guy, who's obviously led the Hurricanes in the right direction, I think Raleigh's chances got a lot better with Tom Dundon saying that he's willing to spearhead those efforts. But that doesn't mean it's going to be easy. And it doesn't mean that, you know, Raleigh is in a pole position or anything like that. There's a half a dozen or so legit candidates, and we won't know who's for real anytime in the next 12 months.
Tom Dundon needs to go knock on Michael Jordan's door, be like, hey, man, want to jump in on this? Baseball, you know,
right?
Be a perfect, you know, book into Michael Jordan's business.
As long as Michael doesn't say Charlotte, then or then there's a weird competition going on.
Follow DG on Twitter at David Glenn Show. Go and rate and subscribe the North Carolina Sports Network on the their YouTube channel. They're putting out excellent content there, including the return of the David Glenn Show, where you can hear that Tom Dundon interview and much, much more. We'll stop it right there because I didn't want to get into Panther stuff with you because I'm pretty good. So we'll
just there are enough right sad there. Things in the world, right? Yeah. We'll leave that out for now.
Now watch. This will be the week because Carolina, I always joke, Carolina always wins a game in a year like this that they're not supposed to win. And this lines up as that game with Miami dropping 70 burgers on people or whatever. We have no one in the secondary right now to cover anybody. Watch this be the game that somehow Carolina pulls off on the road before the bye. Good to have you in here, and we'll see you week after next. Thanks, DG.
Thanks, Des. Always good to be with you. Keep up the good work.
Coming up, prep beat writer for the Winston-Salem Journal, Mark Pruitt's going to stop by, give us his top three games in the triad to watch high school football. Back in just a bit, franchise players here on TobaccoRoadSportsRadio.com.
Franchise players are often referred to as the face of the franchise.
And welcome into the final segment of Franchise Players here on Friday, October the 13th. We got a Friday the 13th going on here. A lot of stuff going on later on tonight in the triad. Again, we are your home for high school football. East Forsyth taking on Reynolds and WTOB at 7 o'clock tonight. And Grimsley taking on Southwest Guilford on WCOG tonight. That's at 7:30. Mike Fanning and Brett Wiseman on the call over there. Myself and Rod Funderburk on the call for Easton Reynolds. It's home coming out in K-Vegas, so definitely come and show up and show out. Mark Pruitt, new beat writer for the Winston-Salem Journal. Congratulations on that, sir. Joining us
Thank
here
in
his regular slot every Friday, giving us his top three high school football games in the triad tonight. Let's just dive right into it, Mark. What do you got? Game number one here for your games to watch for tonight.
Well, I think that the ones everyone's talking about in the Central Piedmont Conference will be West Forsyth 5-2 at Davie 5-2. This one could have been a whole lot more important had both teams not lost last week.
Yeah.
But that kind of shows you the depth of the Central Piedmont Conference. Reagan and Mount Tabor upsetting West and Davie last week in great games. I was at the Tabor-Davie game and first loss in the conference for both of those teams. So it'll be interesting to see how both of them respond after that tonight against good teams. Davey's going to have to figure out a way to contain Kamen Chaplin. I don't think you can do that, quite honestly, after he rushed for 314 yards, four touchdowns last week. And that was without starting left tackle Desmond Jackson in the lineup last week. They moved P.J. Dean over to the left side and came and found plenty of running room, even though West ended up losing that game. Yeah. It's still he's such a weapon. Davey, of course, they've got a pretty stout little offense themselves. Ty Miller kind of fuels that thing. Markel Summers, their running back, he still had over 100 yards last week against a really good Tabor defense, who got one of its best players on the defensive side of the field back last week in Kevin Frazier. But Todd Miller's got three or four different receivers he can get the ball to as well. And the defense for Davie is a lot better than what I can remember it being in years past. And these two teams, you know, one of them is going to have two losses in the league after tonight. And it's kind of strange to see how that's shaken out. But I think the biggest grin on anybody's face last Friday night was probably Todd Willard at East Forsyth for seeing that happen, because now East is – right back in the title picture again.
So. I can attest to that because driving home, we had East Forsyth Parkland. So we did that game, yeah. And East won like 62-7 or whatever it was. And I was getting scores coming back in, and I realized that both West and Davie lost. And I was texting with Coach Willard as we're, you know, coming down the highway. And yeah. I was like, West and Davie both lost. Literally now East controls their own destiny. You went out, you win the conference. Well, no, Davie has to lose. So because if Davie wins out, they win the conference. If West wins out, they win the conference. So this game is super important tonight. And East Forsyth, kind of has to root for West Forsyth to win tonight.
Yeah, and then they, of course, they play each other the last week of the regular season. So it's going to make that game that much more impactful, I think, of kind of how everything's going to play out.
I've been joking with Coach Wallace at West Forsyth during Titans Talk each week after we're over and we're packing up. And I'll tell him, walking past, like, hey, man, you know what I'm rooting for. You know what I want. I want East Forsyth, West Forsyth for the championship, for the belt, last week of the season, because you know we're already going to be out here doing the game anyway. And he's like, no pressure, like every week. And I'm like, no pressure. Welcome to the CPC, coach. This is how it gets down out here. So
looking more and more likely that might play out that way.
Too, the whole reason better when East and West are really good.
West
is a little early. I wouldn't expect them to be this good this early in Kevin Wallace's first season. And East, the truck just keeps rolling with them. Players coming
West
in.
West had the pieces coming back with Kanan and the offensive line. And just a lot of experience.
And they stayed last year. Yeah. That was the thing, that they stayed. They actually stayed to play for Wallace as opposed to going off to, you know, whatever other school in Forsyth County. So Wes and Davey, that's a good one. That might be one of the top games in the state besides, I think Mallet Creek is playing, who's it, Huff?
They're playing Huff, I believe.
Yeah, one of them down in Charlotte. That's like their big game tonight too. Give me your game number two tonight in the triad.
Let's head to Davidson County. Oak Grove at Ledford. Oak Grove 6-1 coming in. Ledford undefeated at 7-0. And I think they're kind of the under the radar team in the triad right now. Not a lot of people talking about them. These two schools are about a driver and a five iron away from each other. Great programs. Oak Grove's the newer one, obviously, in the county. Ledford's always been kind of steady. But their running back, Alex Sanford, is averaging 177 rushing yards per game. He scored 20 touchdowns already. Ledford's defense is no joke. They had they have a 3-2 advantage in the overall series since they started playing each other once Oak Grove became a school. I think we all know enough about Oak Grove. Connor Creech is one of the most dynamic two-way quarterbacks in the triad. Gets it done in the air with his legs. Has just as many touchdowns passing the ball as he does running the ball. He's put up 20, 23, something like that at this point. But he also is second on the team in rushing yards behind Carson Williams, their running back, who's got 7 touchdowns of his own. So this will be a good one. Probably a good time, you know, if you want to break the law Friday night in that area of Davidson County, that might be a good time, because I don't think there's too many people that won't be at that game. That'll be a good one to watch.
Like the that scene in Varsity Blues where everybody piles into the truck and they follow the bus out to wherever they're going to go play, whoever's last, turn off the lights or whatever. So good football game played down in Davidson County. And give me your third one. Who's your third game of the week here?
Looking at Dudley and Rockingham County, this might be, I don't think it's going to be, but it could be one of those don't look past these guys type of games for Dudley, because in 2 weeks they end the conference play with Eastern Guilford, who's also undefeated heading into this week in the conference. Dudley really hasn't had much of a problem with anybody this season. This was the stat that jumped off the page at me when I was looking at it earlier. Dudley's offense averages 56 points per game. They have allowed a total of 41 points this season.
Wow.
That's pretty darn good, is what I say.
So over seven games?
Seven games. They're 7-0 coming into this one. And really just they've just been cruising over everybody. Andrew Atmore, the quarterback, is having a phenomenal season. He's got a bevy of receivers he can throw it to, a couple of D1 talents out there with some Power 5 offers. Running game is really good, and you got to look at that defense, though. I think they're just probably as good as anybody in the triad with what they've been able to do so far this season.
I mean, what you just said, they're allowing like 6.5 points a game or something on defense. Yeah, nuts.
Crazy.
I've joked for the past – 2-3 years now, really ever since we went back to just four classes, that the state made a mistake. Dudley is not supposed to be in 3A. I don't care what anybody tells me, that is a 4A school. It's like a school
in a mask. They were 4A for a little bit.
They won a 4A title, if I'm not mistaken, when they did it. And that is a 4A school. That is a 4A team. And they are just running through 3A. There's some teams, though, down in, I think, Crest, Is good in 3A. Kings Mountain.
There's some good 3A schools. Charlotte is one to look at. Depending on where they put Dudley in the brackets with East or West, because they always kind of fall on that line, there could be some interesting matchups in the 3A West.
And that's the thing, too. I think when they were in 4A the last time, the line was different. The line was like – it's almost like the Forsyth-Guilford County line was like
it
the
used, line. Yeah, and it seems like it's kind of stretched a little farther east now to include Greensboro, but it kind of just depends every year, I think.
I don't like it because it puts everybody in the West. So it's like you're dealing with all the major population centers except for the Triangle. The Triangle's in the east pretty much, and then they're all spaced out as you go towards the coast. But in the West, you got all those mountain schools like Watauga, and Watauga is like the one seed right now, I think, in RPI and 4A.
Their strength of schedule is as good as some of the teams that we get to see every week.
But, well, Grimsley's doing the same thing that happened to Grimsley right now is what happened to East Forsyth last year. They were number one all year, and then they hit that little pocket where they played Parkland and Reynolds, and it dipped their RPI, and it dropped them like sixth or whatever. They still had home field through most of it, but Grimsley's going through the same thing right now. They were number one most of the year, and they started to fall when they played Western Guildford and Ragsdale, which are kind of towards the bottom of 4A. Right. So now they're like at 5 or 6, and Watauga took it. But there's still a month of football to go, and Grimsley's got Northern and Page coming up, so that might help them a little bit. East has got Glenn and West Forsyth, which will – really
kind help of bump those guys up.
Yeah, one of those teams is going to get bumped up probably to the top five.
We're looking at a distinct possibility the CPC could get at least 4, maybe 5 teams in the playoffs. So
I can see East Forsyth, West Forsyth, Davie are pretty much locked.
I think Tabor and I think Reagan has a shot too.
Yeah, and depending on whatever Glenn does over the rest of the season, they can really determine what they do if they could win out, because they got East Forsyth themselves. That could be
that's next week
for them. Yeah,
that may be where I am next Friday night. I'm still pondering that.
We'll be there. It's at Glenn, I think. So did we play them at home last year? I don't remember. I don't remember where it's at, but it's in Kernersville. So
that we do know. Yes.
Let me get you out of here. he'll be back next week. Mark Pruitt, beat writer for the Winston-Salem Journal, with his top 3 high school football games of the week. We are out of time. So if you're listening to this on WWBG, sit around, check out the rest of the stuff that's about to come on. If you're on WTOB, sit tight. We're about to have East Forsyth versus Reynolds start here in about 2 minutes. So just sit tight and get ready for some high school football action tonight. You've been listening to Franchise Players here on TobaccoRoadSportsRadio.com and WWBG 1470 AM, WTOB 980 AM.